Hello, and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, September 9th, 2022. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week, Jillian Piper speaks to Kimberly Carroll, an animal rights advocate and coach for changemakers. For 13 years, Carroll has empowered and counseled thousands of activists, social entrepreneurs, and mission-driven leaders who want to make a bigger difference in the world. By taking clients through a journey of deep introspective work, finding empowering habits, and developing a strategy to unlock one's activism superpowers, Carroll has made a name for herself as one who helps the helpers. In addition to her Coach for Changemakers work, Carroll is also the creator and director of Animal Justice Academy, a program at Animal Justice, the leading animal rights organization in Canada. Carroll is also a director with the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank, which provides cruelty-free, environmentally conscious, and healthy foods to those living under the poverty line. You may also recognize Carroll from her 15 years as a television host and producer with networks like WeTV, CBC Television, The W Network, and CTV. Jillian Piper is Rabble's audience engagement editor. She has previously worked as a freelance producer for Global News, covered federal politics on Parliament Hill, and served as the editor-in-chief at The Charlatan. Here are Carroll and Piper in conversation. Take a listen.
Welcome to Rabble Radio, Kimberly. It's so great to have you here today.
Oh, wonderful to be here, Jillian. I'm really happy to be able to speak to the community here that's just so full of amazing, powerful people that are doing really good things for the world.
Yes, we're super happy you're here, and thanks so much for making the time. For those of our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with the work you do, could you maybe tell us a bit about who you are and sort of where you come from?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, geographically, I come from the Wheat City, Brandon, Manitoba. That's where I was born and raised. I'm now based in Toronto. I'm a coach for changemakers. So I help heal and empower changemakers, whether that be activists or social entrepreneurs or mission-driven nonprofit leaders, so that they can make a bigger impact in this really aching world that we have right now. So I help them with the inner work, the high performance habits, and really tactical strategies to be able to, for them to take their important work to the next level. And, you know, concurrently, and sort of what led into this particular arena I work in is I've also been an activist for more than 15 years. My bigger focus has been in animal rights. I help run a national organization called Animal Justice, and I have created and run something called the Animal Justice Academy. I also am one of the directors at the Toronto Vegetarian Food Bank, but I'm also passionate about environmental rights, Indigenous rights, and democratic reforms. So those are sort of, you know, where more of my time and my skills and my passion go.
That sounds like really amazing work and such a, you know, fun and unique job. I wanted to ask you a bit about what inspired you to become a coach.
Yeah, well, so the first half of my life, Jillian, I actually was a television host and a producer. And so I did quite a roundabout. I sold my soul to television for 15 years, and now I'm trying to earn it back. So for the last 13 years, I've shifted to coaching. Now, that's a long story, but generally, as a coach, it was just something that just really spoke to me. Like when I started sort of doing it, I trained just in this coaching modality, more just to explore this other part of me. And then I saw how powerful it was. And I just sort of started doing it for friends and, you know, people that I worked with in activism. And I realized, wow, this is really powerful work. And I really developed my own coaching modality over the years, one that sort of combines the idea of making those inner experiential shifts, like not just talking about things, but actually doing sort of exercises and experiences that really like shift you from the inside out. And then using those shifts to really inform very practical outer strategies in your life and work. So that was where I started with coaching. But as I was, you know, became actual, you know, a professional coach, and that's how I was making my living, I was finding, because of all of my work in activism, obviously a lot of the people that I was attracting were activists. And I absolutely adored working with activists. Here we have these like courageous and tender souls that are hurting so much for others in the world that they're moved to action. Okay. And there's not a lot of us out there, right? But the key word here is hurting. You know, I was seeing so many of these amazing people getting burnt out, running into debilitating compassion fatigue, or getting too angry or depressed to be effective. And I thought, who is helping the helpers? You know, like this world is in trouble, and our change makers are everything. Like if we don't have them, we're done. And I thought, oh my God, we are burning them out at such a rate, and we really need to turn this around. Being an activist is one of the hardest things, I think, in the world. It's one of the hardest things to do. You're going against the grain of society. You're getting into it because you're a sensitive person to start with. And then you're being bombarded by the worst of the world, you know, by the worst injustices, the worst suffering. And then you're not given any tools to deal with that. And so it's really a recipe for a bit of disaster. And so my belief is, if you want to create a compassionate world, you need to embody compassion. And so I really help folks to cultivate that fierce love, kind of love that puts a stake in the ground and makes you stand up and be fierce and loud for what you believe in, but to still hold that understanding and tenderness in your heart.
It is definitely a difficult job, and activists are sort of on the front lines of a lot of movements and sort of against society, as you're saying. So some support there is definitely welcome. And, you know, with the pandemic in particular, a lot of people are talking a bit about what does work-life balance look like, maybe rearranging some priorities. And I wanted to ask you, you know, what does work-life balance look like if you're an activist, you know, because people get so passionate about their causes. And is that almost taboo to talk about in activism, sort of taking time for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it has been. It's funny, Jillian, because when I started doing this work, like that was the big reaction. It's like, I don't have time to take care of myself. There's, you know, millions of people or animals or trees that need my help, you know, and I can't take this time out. And I totally get it because, Jillian, I've been that person. But I realized through my own journey, oh my God, I can't just go 24/7, you know, being in the horror of everything and pushing against, you know, often brick walls without finding ways to fuel myself, you know, without taking care of my health, you know, without creating community around me, without, you know, reconnecting to what is joyful and loving in this world. Otherwise, we run out of the fuel because, I mean, a lot of us will say, oh, we got so angry, we became activists or so upset. But really what fuels us, it's the love. Okay. We fight mostly because of love, you know, love for equality, love for, you know, people to have freedom. And for beings to be free of suffering. And so it's really important that we arrange our life so that we are still being fueled by some of the things that first inspired us to become activists. So I think boundaries are incredibly important for activists. And I think people are finally starting to clue into that. I don't need to explain it to people so much, but I still do get a lot of activists going, no, I don't have time for this. But I think any activist that's been in this game more than, say, a couple of years knows how easily it is to burn out. And so I'm a big believer of working smarter, not harder, you know, so effectively using your energy. So I'm a big believer in finding, you know, where is your biggest potential contribution? You know, for example, if you're a clever writer, don't waste it fighting with trolls on Instagram. You know, start writing letters to the editor, start writing guest articles or op-eds for papers, you know, find what your skills are. And that like in the business world, they call 10X it. Like that 10X is your effectiveness as an activist. You know, social media has been an incredible tool to democratize activism. It's been single-handedly the most important shift I've seen in my life as far as activism goes. And so it's wonderful if you use it consciously and deliberately, but you need to have time away from it. You absolutely have to unplug for the sake of your nervous system and for the sake of you actually cultivating your own life.
Sort of in addition to social media, are there other things that you feel have differed a lot from when you began activism work to now?
I mean, it's not just social media, it's the internet in general. So, I mean, back 15 years ago when I started seriously doing activism, you were either doing really organic grassroots activism, you know, on the street, you know, or a ragtag group taking on an initiative, or just one-on-one conversations, like just going through, you know, one person at a time. Or there were these huge nonprofits or charities that only a very select few could work at, you know. And so today, like because of the internet, first and foremost, then social media, activism is just much more of an open sort of field. So, you know, for example, an individual can now have hundreds of thousands of followers on social media that they can teach and influence. Or someone can create a piece of content that can travel around the world. Or instead of these either just the ragtag small groups versus the huge, you know, corporate sort of charities, you have so many more smaller and medium-sized groups that are able to really create a huge impact from having an online presence, from having online connections, online presence, online campaigns. And also, I'm finding that funders are starting to recognize the value of having smaller, more nimble groups that are very well organized, but don't have a lot of bureaucracy to slow them down. That can be really responsive to issues. And also, we can now collaborate with people all over the world. We're not just confined to collaborating within our own limited geographical area.
Are there any clients that really stick out to you, you know, that you've worked with that you thought, wow, this is really unique? Or I guess, what are the sort of usual clients you work with on a regular basis?
Well, so one of the things that is kind of a neat thing that I discovered before I sort of, you know, shifted formally into being a coach for change makers is that, you know, this sort of deep work of self-awareness and also self-relationship, doing a lot of the healing of core wounds and all that sort of thing that I was doing with just people in general. Interestingly, those people were not activists before they started with me. And I didn't teach activism. I mean, maybe just a tiny little bit, but because I was an activist and I guess there was a little bit of a thread woven throughout. As soon as they took care of their own personal healing, they wanted to extend it to the world. That's when they decided, now I need to contribute to the world. Even though I've had lots of opportunities to work full-time in activism, I've resisted because I feel like this is such a key piece. I feel like if everybody in the world, you know, were able to go through some deep healing and take care of some of those limiting patterns in their life, we wouldn't need to have activists. You know, the world wouldn't be messed up because people would not be creating these destructive patterns. They wouldn't have to be doing all of these things that take away from the world. They wouldn't have to be superior to other people. And so I really do believe that it's so very important for activists, especially to do that work, because again, we get into activism for a lot of the right reasons, but activism can reflect just as much our limiting patterns and our wounds as the rest of our life once we're in it. And so to be able to take care of the things that are blocking you or making you small or creating destructive habits, that can be just that can change everything. I have different clients, different coaches that come to me for different reasons. Some of them really are just at a place in their life where they aren't working. They're working hard and not smart. And they really haven't found their niche in their activism. Again, they're sort of just doing what is like right in front of them. And some of my work is to really help folks to zero in on, okay, what uniquely can you bring to your mission? What can you uniquely bring? And that is a really beautiful combination of what's your background? You know, what are you interested in? What are your skills? What are some of your qualities? Like, do you have a great sense of humor, or are you incredibly organized? And bringing all of those together to figure out, okay, this is a path that you could take and you could make a much more impactful sort of mark on your mission. And so there's those folks, but it's never just about the strategy. It's never just about that. There's always other things. There's always those, you know, a lot of activists come in because they're just like, I'm just so stuck, or I'm so overwhelmed. Okay. How many times do we hear that from activists? I'm so overwhelmed. I feel that myself. I teach this because I've had to go through this myself. And so we really need to break down, well, where is that overwhelm coming from? We really have to get into some of the root causes. We have to get into the root causes of, you know, are you going 24/7, not giving yourself a break because you actually don't feel like you deserve it? Like, you know, that's something that it can be a commonality. So, you know, to be able to get down to some of those root causes of what is causing this compulsive behavior, okay? What is causing you to do something that is actually working against your health and often working against your cause and your mission? And let's figure that out, and let's heal that at a deep level so that you can rise up and be just one of the most expansive, strong, courageous, but also just filled with love kind of activists out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you really hit the nail on the head there when even you were talking earlier about how, you know, it can feel like your life is being created for you, whereas you should really be creating your own life. I think particularly with activists, when they're seeing the worst all the time, it can get almost doomsday atmosphere, you know, hopeless. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, the world is effed up. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It really is. I mean, we have to be the ones that just can still find some hope that we can turn it around. Or at least if we can't turn it around, we're going to make it as good as possible for as many beings until Armageddon, right? And that is, like, that's a huge piece is, you know, like, I will never tell somebody, do not be angry. You've got every right to be angry. And so my work is how do you feel that anger? How do you let that anger have its space? How do you, you know, in your daily life, you know, are there physical sort of exercises that you could do to move through some of this pain that you're feeling? Because anger is pain. And how can you express that anger and take it and make it into something that is constructive? And so I have, again, a lot of tried and tested techniques around that, really tactical ones, because I think a lot of activists hear, oh, you have to have self-care and you have to love yourself and you have to find love and peace. And it's like, well, how the hell do I do that? And so I'm about, okay, what are the actual practical steps? What are the actual practical exercises that you could weave into your life daily to not lose your, you know, your shit?
And I think too, you know, you were talking earlier about how needing to set boundaries for sure. And I guess if you were going to give one piece of sort of actionable advice to any activist or change maker who's maybe struggling right now with maybe the doomsday scenario of feeling sort of powerless or overwhelmed, what would you sort of tell them, or what advice do you think they should maybe take to heart?
Well, one of the things that when I get really pissed off at people, you know, responding to a campaign and online, and it's just so far gone, and they just don't understand at all, and there's masses of them. I just Mr. Rogers, you know, Mr. Rogers from PBS, his mother used to say, "Look for the helpers." And so what I do when I'm just like, okay, we're going to hell in a handbasket, nobody cares, nobody's paying attention, I look to all of those beings out there that are doing stuff, you know, and they're doing brilliant things. Like, there's some really smart ass activists out there doing some unbelievable work. And so I look to them, and I really spend like some time, not just like sort of looking for, okay, what's wrong, what's new, but I look for who's doing something really interesting. Or I just think about the people that I work with, you know, I just think about people that I've had the pleasure of being able to collaborate with or know. And I just think, oh my God, I think of the good hearts they have. I think about how smart they are. And it just gives me some hope for the future. So, I mean, that really helps. I also just think, like, in terms of boundaries, I do something called a sacred Sunday. I just call it a sacred Sunday. It can be any day of the week, but I choose a day where I do not do anything out of obligation. So I don't go on social media, or I really try to not go online at all. I don't make any appointments, and just a day to be able to follow my own rhythms, to get up when I, you know, when my body wants to wake up, you know, to eat when I want to eat. And, you know, if somebody comes with a great invitation and I feel like it in that moment, I'll go. But otherwise, it's just a day to not be taken hostage by somebody's Facebook post or the news or DMs, and to just to be able to get back to, oh, right, I'm a human being that's living one life, one precious life. And I'm a very, very big proponent of we need to have a pillar in our life of contribution and how can we contribute. But the other pillar has to be about, you are living your one life. What is going to be your pleasure? How are you going to explore yourself? And to me, those two pillars together are magic. Okay. They are the most powerful life lived. If you can have a pillar of contribution in your life and a pillar of self-fulfillment in your life, that makes for a happy life. And it makes for a very fulfilled contributing life. It makes for the world being a better place for you being in it.
Such a nice one, you know, to slow down and, you know, take some time, especially when everything feels like it's whizzing by at a million miles an hour. And I think that really speaks to the value, you know, of your work as a coach for activists and change makers. It's tangible advice like that really goes such a long way. I think that sort of brings me to the end of all the questions I wanted to ask you today. But was there anything that you wanted to quickly touch base on before we sort of wrap up?
Yes, you know what? There's one more thing. You asked about like how activism has changed since I started. One of the things that I should probably mention, because it's really important, is the idea of intersectionality. That has just become a huge theme, thankfully, in the last, you know, 5 years, especially the last couple of years. And it's this understanding that until we dismantle the common threads that are through all forms of oppression, we just keep recreating the oppression in new forms. And so it's just something that I love to see activists do, you know, to be able to dip your toe into a few different things. I mean, you always have to have your sort of main focus or else you're going to be too scattered. But if you can always, you know, make sure that you have friends from different movements, make sure that you are at least playing a supporting role in another issue other than your main issue, you're not only going to, you know, gain new perspectives, you're going to gain new strategies and you're going to gain new allies. So it's just smart all around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it can bring you a lot of hope and generate great ideas as well, you know, to sort of build those networks.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got it, Jillian.
Certainly learned a lot today. Kimberly, thank you so much. And I really appreciate the chance to speak with you. I think this was such an interesting conversation.
Thanks for having me, Jillian.
That was Kimberly Carroll and Jillian Piper in conversation. To any listeners who are interested in improving their activism, Carroll wanted to share a few resources for our audience. The first, a 5-part mini video course on her website, which offers exercises around pain processing, productivity hacks, what to do around conflict, and more. The second, Animal Justice Academy's 6-week free course online, which focuses on self-improvement, how to lobby politicians, how to get the media's attention, and how to organize in your community. Whether you're interested in the fight for animal rights or not, there's something for everyone in this course. Thanks for those excellent resources, Kimberly. Listeners can find links to both courses in the description of the show. Thank you both Kimberly and Jill for this week's interview. Now it's time for a segment we call In Case You Missed It. Here to catch you up on all the news of the week on Rabble.ca, here's editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week on the site, Stephen Wentzel reviews Writing with My Eyes, Staying Alive While Dying by Angela Parker Brown, a book written through and with the author's eyes. Angela Parker Brown was 46 when she was diagnosed with ALS. Now, in her early 50s, Parker Brown can no longer move and requires round-the-clock care. But with eye gaze technology, known as PCI, she can use a text-to-speech software that allows her to communicate, find a show on Netflix, or write a book all through the movement of her eyes. The book focuses on her childhood, becoming a mother, her diagnosis of ALS, and her day-to-day life living with the disease. Parker Brown writes of adapting to her changing role as a mother through the progression of her ALS and the struggle of no longer being able to vocalize the love she has for her daughters. In an interview with Parker Brown, she dictated, quote, "This book means the world to me as I am able to leave a piece of myself with them. Writing this book has taught me that I am enough," end quote. Also this week, as a part of Rabble's Boiling Point series, labor reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga analyzes how extreme weather events have a disproportionate impact on workers and how unions are mobilizing to fight for climate justice. Fiona Hanley, who is the Quebec representative for the Canadian Association of Nurses for the Environment, is calling on the provincial and federal governments to shift towards green healthcare to both better support workers and patients as the world continues to tackle climate change. In Canadian politics, freelance writer Matthew Hayes interviewed former NDP MP Sven Robinson about the effects that the Constitution's notwithstanding clause continues to have on Canadian rights. The clause allows any of the provincial governments or the federal government to opt out of legislation or bypass court rulings if they have a majority of the seats in their legislature to do so. Quebec Premier François Legault used the clause to pass his controversial Bill 96. The Legault government says the legislation is meant to protect the French language in Quebec, but critics point out that it has far-reaching implications for healthcare, education, and the law. For example, doctors must treat their patients only in French starting 6 months after they arrive. Strict limits on enrollment in the English language colleges are also included in the law, and those engaged in the Quebec legal system will no longer have the right to be addressed in English. Situations like the one in Quebec is exactly why Robinson voted against the notwithstanding clause. Robinson told Hayes, quote, "These rights are not absolute. If they can make an argument that certain legislation is demonstrably justifiable, then they can have their day in court. But to just opt out entirely and say that these rights do not apply, period, that governments can simply ignore the Charter of Rights, is not acceptable, which is precisely what the notwithstanding clause allows for," end quote. Finally, don't miss it. Courage My Friends is back for a third season next week. Hosted on Rabble's sister podcast Needs No Introduction, the third season of Courage My Friends will focus on housing, education, the erosion of public goods, just economics, the plight of migrant workers, and the climate crisis. Tune in to Needs No Introduction on Wednesday, September 14th, 2022, to catch the first episode of the latest season of Courage My Friends. You can read the full version of these stories and much, much more on rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. And happy back to school, listeners. Are you interested in sharing Rabble Radio on your campus, college, or local radio station? Please email Brianne at rabble.ca to learn how you can host our show on your programming every week. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Lehrenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.